The next case on this morning's call is number 06-3433, Leyva against the Attorney General. Sharma Crawford.
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is William Sharma Crawford, and I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Mr. Leyva. This is an asylum case from Colombia, and the issue in this case seems to be how much is enough. It's undisputed at this point. At least there's no credibility issues in this case. The appellant was deemed credible at the trial phase. The facts aren't necessarily in contention. We have a BIA decision which accedes that even if Mr. Leyva genuinely felt that he was subjectively had a fear of future persecution, they didn't find that he was objectively reasonable. Neither the immigration judge's decision nor the Board of Immigration Appeals decision makes mention of over 250 pages of corroborating evidence. Contained within that evidence is both support for Mr. Leyva's contention that the Colombian military, for whom he worked as an accountant, has close ties to the paramilitaries that operate freely in Colombia. He maintains that he was threatened by those paramilitaries when he uncovered accounting irregularities, and he went to his supervisors with those accounting irregularities.
And let me cut to, because we don't have much time.
Certainly.
Is there any evidence in the record about the extent of the injuries he suffered when he was kidnapped and beaten? Because the IJ wrote that he was not seriously harmed. So what evidence do you have to show the extent of the injuries he received?
I was not trial.
Was put in the record?
I wasn't trial counsel, Your Honor. Yeah, I understand. And it's my understanding that his testimony is only that he suffered a severe beating, but there's no medical evidence that I reviewed to say this was the extent that he was incapacitated for any amount of time.
But there's no evidence that he testified as to what that meant, right?
No, Your Honor.
There were any long-term effects, just from his personal standpoint, like
correct.
A broken arm or wrist or something like that.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't believe that exists in the record except that he suffered a beating, he was hooded, his children were threatened, and he was threatened. That was the extent of that encounter.
Have you ever brought this to other authorities in Colombia?
No, Your Honor. It's my understanding that the record indicates he brought them to his immediate supervisor. He followed chain of command in the military, and that level of superiority shut him down, told him to be quiet, and in fact, in some of the cases, threatened him and told him to be quiet, certainly in 99 and 2000. After each time he brought it up, he was transferred.
Was there any evidence that he made any external report of the corruption?
I believe the evidence was that it was exactly the opposite, Your Honor, that he did not. That he went up one level was
and that was it.
That was it. He was threatened and he was shut down. There's support in preparing for today. I searched again to see if there were any new cases, at least in the Seventh Circuit and around, as far as whether whistleblowing is a political motivation or it's a social group. The circuits seem to be split. The Ninth Circuit is very firm that governmental whistleblowing is a political act and is capable of supporting a fear or under the five groups and our political opinion.
Let me ask you this. With no evidence that he made any external report of corruption other than, like you said, that he went up to the next level, how can any persecution be on account of his political opinion?
Well, I think, Your Honor, when you're within the government and you're complaining about the government and you move upwards within the government to complain and you are shut down and persecuted for that, that's the government acting against you. I think that's then a political manifestation. We can only look at our own headlines to look at the furor over the U.S. Attorney's Office. Those are firings, arguably they're internal mechanisms within that office, but yet they have an undeniable political taint to them. So if he comes to his supervisor and says there are accounting irregularities, money is being diverted from these funds to personal interests, that may very well be an accounting irregularity, a simple theft, but it also may be a political issue to say, these superiors have connections with the paramilitary. We feel this is our right and duty as the government. They are inexorably tied, both as personal gain, as criminal gain, but they're also political. They by themselves, as a position in the military, as a position in that government, tie it to a political theory. So therefore, the Ninth Circuit has agreed in four cases. Most notably, Ferundac was the 2007 case that was recently held by the Ninth Circuit. Fedunyak, my apologies, v. Gonzalez, 477 F3rd, 1126. They carry on for a good paragraph about the political nature of whistleblowing. I think it is an inexorable tie in that regard. The First and the Fifth have not made a decision whether they consider whistleblowing to be a particular social group. They didn't reach that conclusion. They felt that the evidence wasn't sufficient.
Well, if whistleblowing is political, then wouldn't it have to be external, just to where you go outside whatever the internal corruption is or something and let the public know, and then that becomes, I guess, by some definition, political. And that's the whistleblower who's going to be punished or whatever. Someone who just says something internally, puts a memo to someone else, and then they don't follow it. I know there's been some of that, like in the 9/11. So there was an internal memo, but nobody went outside and screamed and yelled about it.
But
so I don't know what a definition of a whistleblower is by...
Well, I think if we look at an employment scenario where I, as an employee, go to my supervisor and I say we have these problems, and then I'm punished for that, that's at that point that I step out and seek redress in the courts to say, wait a minute, you punished me for telling you there was something wrong. In this case, he went to his supervisors and said, we have something wrong, and was persecuted for it. Not just punished, he was transferred, which would be consistent in an employment aspect, but he was threatened, his children were threatened, he was beaten, he was assisted to leave the Columbia by one of the admirals who thought that he was in sufficient danger to leave.
But they also did some internal investigation and ultimately fired somebody.
That's true. One of the colonels was removed back in 2000 when the corruption that Mr. Leyva had a piece of was exploded into the public. Mr. Leyva, I'm certainly not suggesting he was responsible for that publication of that, but certainly he was dealing with that same corruption, and one member of the military was punished. But it certainly seemed in the encounters and the testimony that his in that corner that he had went further than just the one person that was punished. At this point, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal if there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sharmer Crawford.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Ms. Farrell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Corey Farrell on behalf of the Attorney General. Petitioners in this case have not met their burden to show that the record evidence compels reversal of the agency's denial of protection under the Convention Against Torture and Asylum. Therefore, this Court should uphold the agency's decision and deny the petition for review. The question before this Court is whether the mistreatment and threats experienced by petitioners resulting from Petitioner Leyva's discovery of accounting irregularities within the Colombian Navy rose to the level of persecution as envisioned by the INA and was on account of political opinion.
Well, the IJ wrote that Leyva was not seriously harmed. What evidence in the record supports a finding that the beating did not result in serious harm?
There is no evidence in the record that Petitioner Leyva needed to seek medical treatment or did seek medical treatment. In fact, in his testimony, he only says, they beat me. And in his affidavit, that's basically all he says either. There's no further information given on this incident and no evidence that he was seriously harmed. It was a brief detention lasting about 2 hours with no serious injury. And this Court has held that threats, in order to be persecution, need to be extreme and more than mere harassment, and that in not all cases detentions rise to the level of persecution. And in this case, Petitioner Leyva never reported the threats or detention to the police or anyone outside of the Navy. And additionally, he returned to work for 2 months after the detention occurred for working for the people who he believed were persecuting him and were responsible for this detention. Petitioner Leyva also testified that he only intended on temporarily visiting the United States, that he did not come here to apply for asylum. And then he testified that friends talked him into applying for asylum. Also, Petitioner Leyva's wife and children remained in Colombia for several months after he left for the United States. The testimony indicates that they were threatened and harassed, but yet they were able to remain unharmed in Colombia. This sequence of events just does not compel the result that he was fleeing persecution in Colombia. Also, this persecution, even if there was any, was not on account of political opinion. The immigration judge first correctly found that he was not even a whistleblower. He was only doing his job. The Colombian government was investigating. Petitioner was an accountant, and the Colombian government had auditors in within the military to look for the corruption and find the source of it. So petitioner's job as an accountant was to follow the money, and that's what he did. And he turned over that information to the auditors. He did not go public with any of this information, and the threats he received were not because of any political opinion. They were personal threats. The men responsible for this corruption simply did not want their bad deeds to be exposed, and as was already explained, the Colombian government did punish one of those involved, and so the officers still involved in the corruption did not want to suffer the same fate. If there are no further questions, I would ask that for the foregoing reasons, the court should affirm the agency's decision and deny the petition for review.
Thank you, Ms. Farrell. How much time does counsel have? Sir, you have 3 minutes left.
Even if you don't find that the threats over a period of years, the beating and the detention rise to past persecution, there is, despite the holding of the Board of Immigration Appeals, a subjective fear of future persecution contained in the corroborating documentation provided at trial. That corroboration comes from a document put out by the UNHCR. It's at page 68 of our appendix, and it dictates or it documents the findings of two professors, one of whom is in the employ of the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services as a consultant for Colombia, and the other is a gentleman from Georgetown. They both find that the paramilitary often employ, and I'm quoting now, highly sophisticated databases and computer networks. An individual who is threatened in one of their area of the country will not be notably safer by relocating to another. He goes on to say that there are cases of people leaving the country for a period of months or years and then being killed after returning. Memories are long, and data is systematically recorded and analyzed. This is 30th June 2003. Similarly, the associate professor of Stetson University College of Law indicated in the last several years, it's become increasingly difficult for an individual to escape the long arm of the guerrilla and paramilitary groups. None of this evidence is discussed either by the IJ or by the Board of Immigration Appeals. It's clear that this individual, again, it's undisputed that Mr. Leyva was threatened by the paramilitaries. It's undisputed that he was threatened over his discovery of accounting irregularities that he continued to find within the Colombian Navy. He was threatened by his superiors. He was transferred. He was punished. He was ultimately hunted down and held and beaten and threatened. His children were threatened. And it's clear from the government's own witnesses, the government's own experts, that he would be in danger were he to return. Thank you very much, and we would ask that the decision be vacated and the matter remanded to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel in the case, and it will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.